And a lot of people came to a realization that I think I'm wasting my life. Like, I'm burning my life doing something I'm not passionate about, or doing something for reasons that don't feel like reasons that are really helping me to thrive. I'm surviving, but I'm not thriving.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. I've brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted.
Thank you for joining us here on the Autoimmune Hour with Sharon Saylor. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune and Life Interrupted Radio. Join the Autoimmune Hour's Courage Club. Sign up now at understandingautoimmune.com. Now, back to your host, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And as always, it's my honor and pleasure to be with you here on another brand new episode. And I'm so excited. We have a return guest. And honestly, she's been traveling the world doing amazing things because I've been after her for a while to join us again. And she has a little break in her action. And she's agreed to join us again. Her name, you'll remember her. She's awesome. Dr. Valerie Renee Shepherd. And we're going to talk about what I think is really important, and that's keeping the positive attitudes. And she is an amazing, what I'll call, survivor to thriver story. She had a catastrophic stroke and had to relearn lots of things. And she, before that, she was an amazing person, was a self-mastery expert, but somehow, you know, this is just takes it to a whole new level when you have to re-educate yourself on so many things about your body and all of that. So we're going to talk to her about being an awesome thriver, and she is the CEO of the Hartley Center for Mindfulness and Self-Mastery, and she's also the author of the multi-award-winning number one international bestseller, Living Happy to Be Me, and I think the subtitle is Dancing Your Soul Lifestyle, I think. Oh, we'll ask her about that. Valerie, thanks for being back on the show.
Hi, Sharon. Thank you so much for having me. Hello out there, Autoimmune Hour audience. I'm so grateful to be back and sending you all kinds of good juju.
Yes, absolutely. It's so wonderful to see you on the video, guys. If you have a chance, if you're just listening to the podcast, it's awesome. But it's wonderful to see you, Valerie. It's been too long. I know you've been traveling the world, and I think that's awesome.
Yes, and I'm having fun doing it. And, you know, accomplishments and all that stuff aside, the fun is what it's really all about.
And I'm going to take a little rabbit hole, Valerie, because I find this so wonderful that you have become an archery expert.
Ha 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 ha. Not an expert. Well, far from that.
I knew you before the stroke and everything. And I thought at the time, you know, this is just me, like, wow. And then I see you doing archery and I'm like, that never entered my mind as something. I mean, that's amazing. So first off, talk about the courage and the bravery or whatever it is you want to talk about stepping into the thriver. Let's just go for it attitude.
How about it? Okay. So I'm just wanting to have my life be inspiring and dynamic and fun. And I've already done the whole work hard, prove myself, strive, work harder. I've done that. Someone told me I had a PhD and working my butt off. And I was like, yeah.
I love it. I would agree with that.
Yeah. So I'm tired of being the driven person. And I just made up my mind. And then the stroke helped me anchor, you know, deeper into that because of the physiological incapacitations of my, you know, my body. And so I got also very bored with traditional physical therapy. I was an NCAA Division I conference champion in track and field. And I got bored with like the monotony of the workouts. And so physical therapy was just like, oh. So what I started to do was pick up things that I knew would challenge my body and help me rehabilitate, but they were more than just going to the gym and lifting weights and doing stretches and things like that. So my brother is my primary archery go-to helper guy. He is grandmaster, blah, blah, blah. He shoots like 5 times my average. And I was visiting him one time and I had said that, you know, this right arm, I could really use something to do to try and strengthen it and bring it back online in my brain. And so he took me outside and he's got an archery range on his property. So that's kind of cool. He shoots every day. That's wicked cool. And so he took me out and we shot and I just fell in love with it. And I started shooting with a group in Orange County using loaner equipment. And then I got to the point where I think I want to get my own stuff. So my brother bought me a kit and I've got a beautiful bow, which I named affectionately Black Beauty. She is a Samick Sage recurve, and he made me some beautiful arrows, and I shoot at least once a week, and if I could shoot more, I would. So, and I'm actually getting better. I was in a, you know, a little friendly, we did a couple of little competition things here and there, and I actually shot my personal best a couple weekends ago. And I mean, the lesson here is you get to choose, right? You get to choose. So if anything in your life is challenging in a way that kind of pushes you but doesn't inspire you, stop doing it. Change it. Make it so that it serves you 360 degrees. And so I love archery. I get to use my legs, my back, my shoulders, my eye. You know, the right eye is my dominant eye, and it was affected by the hemorrhage. So I'm doing everything that supports my right side to grow, laughing, fresh air, looking at hawks. I mean, delight, delight, delight. More please, more please, more please.
Oh, I could see that from the photos that you post. The smile, it just takes up your whole face. It's like, she's having fun.
Yes, indeed. And I've made some little course corrections lately with the way I'm sighting the target. And I've seen some really great improvement, and I've been getting yellows every time I shoot, every practice, not every round, every end. And so I'm just really excited about the next competition. Ha ha ha.
I think that's fabulous. And to me, it's important. I like to challenge myself to things that I've never done before around my birthday. And what happened, I've been doing it for a couple of decades. And what's happened is if I get a little sloppy and I haven't decided yet, some friend will decide for me. And off we go.
Perfect. I love that because that's when I do my New Year's resolutions. I don't do them on December 31st. I go for the change of my life year. And so that's when I kind of sit down and look inward and come up with what's it going to be this year. And so I love making things around that solar return of your individual life and individual year. That's fantastic, Sharon.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. Sometimes we do some pretty amazing stuff, and sometimes I'm not so good at it. Like riding a motorcycle, not my thing.
No.
The people I went with had never ridden before, and they came in, you know, first and second in the class, and me dead last.
You know what?
But we still had a good time.
Yeah, exactly. So I've got a story like that too. Like I love horses. I always have. And I've always wanted, you know, I was one of the girls that was like 10 years old and wanted a pony. And so at different times in my life, I've been able to take horseback riding lessons, like more than just get on the horse and like walk down a trail and then come back, like real lessons. And I was taking dressage lessons. And at the time I was 33 years old, taking my beginner dressage, and there were 12 other students in the class, and the eldest was 10.
I was going to mention.
It's hilarious. And they were so gracious and so welcoming. But yeah, I did pretty well. It was funny when they would say, put your heels down. Like they would ride by me while we're riding in a circle, and they would tell me, just put your heels down, you know, things like that. It was so precious. But yeah, you know, when you talked a little bit ago about survive from going from surviving to thriving. And when you think about it, It's not really that hard. Anybody who's made the transition probably has times when they look back and go, how did I get here? And when they put together the formula that got them from surviving to thriving, many of them, I suspect, don't have the data, but I suspect many of them notice that, wow, that was not as hard as I thought it was. Like I got here much faster than I thought I would, and it didn't kill me. I'm having fun and it's great. And I go back to the idea that it is your personal choice. And even the fact, the idea I'm thriving or I'm not thriving is a choice.
Absolutely.
There's no state called thriving that is a universal state for no matter who gets into it. It's really individualized state of acceptance, of allowing, of choosing, and of growing and expanding and all kinds of good juju.
Well, to me, it's important that when I got my diagnosis, everything stopped and I had to reconsider a whole lots of things the way that my life had been up to that point. In hindsight, amazing things that has happened in that since 2014 when the diagnosis was to now that never would have happened otherwise. And I find that fascinating. And just it wasn't like one big choice, like I'm gonna be a thriver. I think I ever said that, but it was I big thing was refusing to take some gaslighting that I got early on from medical professionals and others, like, oh, should you be doing that? And things like that. It's like, as you said, choose. I was the one who knew best. Well, yeah, I feel fine. I think I can do that. Let's give it a go and see how it goes.
Exactly. I mean, I did a this period, I think it was about 2.5 years after the hemorrhage. And there was a colleague who was offering this wilderness quest, a vision quest in Colorado. It involved like 3 days out in the wilderness by yourself and no food. It was a fasting 3-day vision quest, and there was stuff around it, about 10 days around that total. But I remember saying I wanted to do it, not to challenge my body. Like it wasn't about put my body through hell to make it heal faster. It was more about becoming in a better relationship with my body relative to where it was then. I knew in the past I hadn't been such a good friend, nurturer, carer of my body. I pushed it and I kind of beat it up, and I didn't talk very kindly about it. I have bad knees and stuff like that, and I know better than to speak that way about my body today. But this vision quest was really an opportunity for me to ask, rather than pound it into submission, to ask, like, are we capable of climbing this rock? And are we capable of lifting this thing? And are we capable of doing a number of different things that I did? And it really shifted how I could see what I was going to be capable of going forward, and what my kind of baseline, my new baseline was. And not my new normal, my new baseline. I would love for people to really hear that, the difference between baseline and normal, because coming out of the last 3 years, people are looking for new normal, and I'd say maybe they should not bother with that, but that's another discussion. But so this baseline, and I'm with you, this idea of thriving has kind of organically come up as I've worked in more harmony and partnership with my body to see what it could be. And when I first woke up, I never thought thriving was going to be something I would experience more in my post-hemorrhage, post-brain hemorrhage body versus my pre-brain hemorrhage body. And I'd say I'm thriving more now as who I'm being and how I'm being that than I was ever before in pre-stroke land. So I agree with you.
And I 100% agree with you on that for my pre-diagnosis to now too. I am much more gentle with myself and others. And much more respectful of my body. And I think the one thing that I've noticed a lot, if in hindsight, I'm thinking I thought I was grateful for a lot of things. maybe not. Maybe I was going at too fast a pace to be grateful, which I was doing that. I was quite the road warrior, as you know. But the just stopping and being grateful for stuff is something I really enjoy now. I'm all about awe kinds of moments. If I see a sunset and maybe I'm driving somewhere and it involves pulling off an exit somewhere, I will do that. There was a big moon last fall, one of those moons that, you know, just looks enormous and it's golden. And
Superman.
Yeah, those moons were, that moon was just breathtaking.
Yeah.
I found a little place that was dark on a side road and just sat there for probably 10 minutes. And there was just so much comfort and I felt so good of doing it. And the gratitude of like, wow, just being able to watch that was amazing.
It's really a combination of present moment awareness and receiving, like allowing myself to receive beauty from nature, allowing myself to receive quiet, allowing myself to receive a pause. And a lot of people are still gathering themselves into that place of welcoming in the kind of road less traveled experiences through their lives. And especially coming out of the uncertainties after the last few years of a lot of people that I talk to are still feeling uncertainty. They tell me they feel kind of wobbly, a little discombobulated. And
I'd go a little deeper for myself, Valerie. There are times when this, I never thought this before. It's like, is this a mask situation or can I go there without my mask? I mean, all these sort of fear-based things come up for me that I'm still working through. It's like, well, isn't that interesting that I'm feeling some angst still? And I know we're not totally through this, but I think it's, we're working through to that place of, I'm not sure what it is, balance with it, I guess. And I think, you know, the other thing, as I think about it, there's still a lot of grief around the whole thing.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a major part of the wobbliness and, you know, the surprise of loss. There were so many different ways that loss kind of slapped people around, whether it was people leaving the body physical and transitioning off the planet or jobs changing or jobs being lost and people revamping how their entire lives are lived and make major questions about what feels like me and what doesn't and why is that. And so I agree with you that there's grief still a part of a lot of people's lives. And, you know, when we think about this suffering versus thriving, I'd really love for people to remember that it's never the situation itself, right? It's not really the loss that is so difficult to deal with. It's our interpretation and our perspective of what loss means, of how it's going to affect me, of what that means I have to give up or how I'm never going to see someone again and I wasn't ready. And it's the mental machinations that we put on top of just a plain and simple dynamic. The dynamic itself is fairly neutral. Death is a part of life. Loss and transition and change are just a natural part of life. Nothing is standing still. Everything is changing every second. So it's our interpretations that are triggering these feelings inside of us of pain and regret and deep sadness. And when we get better able to, I don't want to use the word manage because I think it's deeper than that. It's more of a accept, allow, and then receive. And what we're receiving is the depth and breadth of the goodness, the possibilities that lay inside the situation that we're having such trouble with. I know that is not easy. I'm not trying to be Pollyanna and just say, oh, just paint it with a pretty brush. That's not at all. If anyone's hearing that, please hear me say, that's not what I mean. What I mean is that even in the midst of darkness, there can be light. And the only difference is whether you see it or not, is whether you choose to look for it, and then you are able to receive it when it's there.
That's fabulous. We need to take a quick commercial break. I'm going to let that sink in a little bit, Valerie. We'll be okay. Right back.
The Autoimmune Hour will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by understandingautoimmune.com to learn more.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hi, it's Olivia Munn with my shelter pets, Frankie and Chance. Say hi, guys. When I adopted them, I discovered that they both have incredible personalities. Chance's sole purpose in life is to love and to be loved. Frankie is a little bit of a scoundrel and always entertaining. They're a little bit of a lot of things, but they're all pure love. Adopt pure love at theshelterpetproject.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the Humane Society of the United States, and Maddie's Fund.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenil and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenil.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, "Sorry, I'm rambling," you say, "Thank you for listening." Join us at ProjectForgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com, and you can find this and all our previous episodes, over 400 now, I think we're 420-something, over at UnderstandingAutoimmune.com, so you can check out Valerie's other shows, too, as well. Now, Valerie, I am just having an amazing time here. I love catching up with you and all of your new learnings. The one thing about Dr. Valerie Renee Shepherd is she is constantly learning, finding new things and bringing new things to light. And I like to say, when I talk to Valerie, sometimes after she says it, it's like so obvious, you know, it's like, but sometimes obvious isn't obvious until somebody comments on it. And Valerie's always at the lead, you know, the edge there of pointing these things out for us. And now you mentioned discombobulated. I would not have used that word to describe parts of my community I hear from or feeling. But now that I've had a chance to sit with that word over the break, I'm like, yeah, that's really a good word for it. What else are you seeing?
You know, I hear so many different things that kind of fall somewhat underneath that heading, which basically is a bucket that's meant to encompass all the ways things are permanently, like seeming permanently different from what I had come to consider normal and what I was used to and what I was practiced at and what I felt comfortable in, like all the ways that we perceive that our lives are happening the way we want them, and that also we take for granted. Like, this is just the way it is. The status quo becomes so redundantly lived over and over again that we have a hard time adjusting when aspects of that status quo change. So I've heard all variations on the theme. Some people who are worried about their semi-adult or their emerging adult children who can't seem to settle into what they would call their new normal, and there's still a state of flux where they live and in terms of the spaces in which they travel. And I get questions from parents about, well, how do I support them without being overprotective, without pulling them out of things, without being dictatorial about where they go and what they do? I hear questions about people feeling like, well, I didn't have any questions. My life was pretty much down. You know, I had it down. I had my routine. I had my places that I moved in and where I was a mover and a shaker and the places where I played and had fun. And now that's topsy-turvy. And there's been a change in even the communities that I have played in before, who's there and who's not, and how we actually engage. And so people have felt like they are sort of looking. I had one person say, well, I'm not a people pleaser, but one of the biggest things I've noticed is I don't know how to please myself.
Wow.
I don't really know what self-love and nurturing are. And like a lot of people came to that understanding or that knowledge of themselves in all the downtime and all the time at home or the time potentially in isolation. A lot of people were like, I had to listen to my thoughts and my thoughts weren't very kind. I had to watch myself in action because there was nobody else. I was just doing stuff with me. And it occurred to me, I don't know how to have fun. I don't know what makes my heart sing. You know, people say it's not work if you love it. And a lot of people didn't love their work. They were doing it to, you know, I've got to have insurance for the family, or I'm just doing it till that magic retirement age. And a lot of people came to a realization that I think I'm wasting my life. Like, I'm burning my life doing something I'm not passionate about, or doing something for reasons that don't feel like reasons that are really helping me to thrive. I'm surviving, but I'm not thriving. And a lot of people have come to realize that's what they were doing. And most importantly, that's what I'm doing to myself. That's what I'm showing my kids that life is about. So a lot of people have come to me saying, help, you know, wait. I need to get into these questions. And, you know, the answers are going to be out there. And right now I just need to, what other questions do I have? What more might be possible? And so I've been helping people kind of look at those things and take a breath. My first action step is always breathe. Like, that's a very practical action step, by the way. Like, oxygenate.
That most people forget.
Oxygenate the blood, oxygenate the brain, allow yourself to take a beat or 10.
You know, it's not just in the situation either, Valerie, because when I'm doing my body language and my communication work, a lot of times, one of the first things I say we'd go through is a breathing process. Let's just step back and breathe so we can clear things out. It's like clears the cobwebs. You know what amazes me about breathing? I know you do laughter, yoga, and all these things, which are fabulous. But you know what amazes me about breathing is how fast it can shift your body and your mindset.
Milliseconds.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Milliseconds. It's amazing. And really should be used as a tool. I know that it's, you know, the autonomic nervous system, it just does what it does. And, right? And you can actually dictate how you use the breath as a part of serving yourself into the energy of thriving, into the experience of the body in thrive mode. And so that's one of my favorite things. And the other one is sometimes what people's lives are calling for is the exact opposite of what they think they're supposed to do. So often when people land in this space of the unknown, the void, that what was old isn't going to work in the new realities of today for whatever reason, right? And what is new for me specifically in the realities of today hasn't fully anchored, hasn't really landed. I haven't chosen. I'm not sure what I want. And in that void, that space of, oh my gosh, can't go backwards. Oh my gosh, don't know how to go forward. A lot of people panic. A lot of people start to denigrate themselves. They tell themselves little stories about how I should know this at my age. They tell them some stories about they missed all the signs. Why didn't I see this coming? And they start to actually get into a very negative place that is derogatory to themselves. And they become jailer, judge, jury, executioner, all of that. When what they could be doing, what I offer that they do, is to just kind of notice, wow, this is interesting. I have no idea. I have no idea what I want to do. I have no.
I have a file folder in my head that I tell people about. It's like it's called "Isn't That Interesting?" And I don't know what this means, but I'm just putting it in this "Isn't That Interesting?" file.
That's part of acceptance. That's part of the neutrality that says, huh, so I've just been laid off. My job's gone away. I don't know anyone who's hiring, and I wasn't prepared. Like panic doesn't serve you in that situation. It's much better to take a moment and go, well, this isn't this interesting. That's called accepting. And then the next thing that can come after that is a leaning in. So a lot of times when people get scared, they're ah, and they lean back. And what I'm offering and suggesting is, how about if you lean in and say, okay, crazy situation. Okay, surprising situation. Okay, scary situation. Okay, oh my gosh, situation. What's going on? Like, what did you come to teach me? What are you offering me? What's possible for me leaning in to get to know the situation better rather than leaning out and saying, since I don't know the situation, I should be afraid of it. And they're radically different perspectives. It's leaning in and saying, I don't know anything about you. Tell me, show me, be my friend. What can I do to thrive in this situation in this current moment? Not thinking, where am I going to be a year from now? Not thinking when that bill's due 6 weeks from now, but right now, in this moment, how can I make peace with the present moment so that I can sink into a space of openness? Right. So energetically, when life is throwing us a curveball, we want to raise an open-handed mitt and catch it. We don't want to bat it away. We want to say, I've got a giant mitt. Come on, curveball. I'm ready. And then when the curveball lands in the mitt, we want to say, well, aren't you interesting? And wow, what would I receive? Were I to say, tell me more, show me more, give me more, if I were to make peace with that. And sometimes people may need a learned intermediary to shepherd them into their new kind of up-leveled life. And what I see too often is that people get scared, they get upset, and they spiral down. They look for blaming and shaming. Who did this to me? Why is this happening? If those people over there had done something differently or not done anything at all, or just would go off of the planet and leave me alone, and they just start spiral, spiral, spiral into a place that's very difficult to live in, let alone come back from. And it's a lot more powerful to be in neutrality as these massive changes kind of take hold in one's life. Start from the neutrality and spiral up by doing exactly what you said a little while ago. What is there happening right now that I could be grateful for, like truly grateful for, not Pollyanna gratitude, but truly grateful for. And then, of course, because this is what I do and love to do, we have, my team and I have created this amazing experience that we'll talk about later, to help people. If people are looking for something.
I'm so excited about it. I read about it the other day.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But we'll
yes,
get
yes.
back to this. We'll go back. But I had a quick question, one of the things that I've noticed is we're at that place of neutrality, but sometimes I get stuck there. I'm like, okay, isn't that interesting? But then I'm kind of like waiting for the next and.
I get it.
Yeah. Is that a common thing, or is that just weird?
I don't think it's weird, and I don't necessarily know how common it is. So what I would say is, whatever happens when we're there, if we can just make it okay. See, even the question of, is that weird, is actually changing your relationship to whatever it is. For you to say, oh, well, still don't have any inspiration, still not getting a message. If that happens for too long, what I suggest that people do is to test their way to success. So remember I mentioned, you and I were talking about how we got the physical body to come back online, how we made it through these situations that were like, what the, and then now what? So what now what is what I say. Okay, so I don't really know what I'm supposed to be doing, but I will dip my toe in the water over here and I'll see. Maybe I can do this, maybe I can't. And then we might see that there are some conditions that really serve us and some conditions that don't. And if we are really astute in our ability to kind of notice what we notice, this is self-awareness. One of the, it's the number one pillar of self-mastery is self-awareness, like noticing myself in my life, noticing what I'm doing, noticing how I make decisions, noticing what ticks me off, noticing what, so quote unquote, pushes my buttons, noticing when I lose my temper, when I'm impatient, like noticing those things. And then in the moment, when you're dealing with this new situation, be attuned. What's going on? This feels abrasive. I don't want to be in this environment. What about this environment is making it feel abrasive? Is it just that it's new and I feel out of my own element? And so I'm not really sure how to behave with this group of people or that new thing. Or is it really something that doesn't feel like I'm supposed to be here? And it really is an opportunity to call yourself into a deeper awareness, a deeper listening, a deeper leaning in and doing that. Huh, that's interesting. I'm still not feeling anything. Like to the point that we allow ourselves to be in the nothingness, the void. And the void experience can last. It's the same way that grief lasts, right? It's over when it's over. And so 99% of life that's not within our realm of control. I mean, we can force ourselves through the void. We can pick something and go do it so that we're not sitting in the void. And what I often hear from clients and students is, yeah, they rue the day that they did that. I hear so many times, I wish I had just been patient and allowed myself to be alone, or I wish I'd been patient and just allowed myself more time to do nothing. I mean, that was my story. After I went back and got back into working way too soon after the hemorrhage. I mean, I really don't believe that I gave myself enough time. And I think some of the dynamics that I have still going on are the result of having pushed myself to get over it a little too fast. So I say, let it take however long it takes. And if you're still in the, well, isn't that interesting? Make that absolutely perfect.
Beautiful, beautiful. That idea of get over it, that's something I hear from my community a fair amount. Like, I should be over this. I should be able to, you know, I should be done with this, or it's been, and they put a date to it. And it's a fascinating thing to understand that idea. And some people in my community have commented and chatted about this idea of the outside of, like, well, you look fine. Why aren't you over it?
Yeah.
a lot of autoimmune doesn't have a real outside manifestation, like a physical manifestation. A lot of autoimmune is internal, the fatigue, the brain fog, the all sorts of muscle pain, those sorts of things. People can't see how much
you're going through. And that's interesting. So a couple thoughts on that. So have you ever heard anything like this? Stop that crying or I'll give you something to cry about.
Oh, yeah. I think in my community growing up, that was the common phrase from the parents.
Yeah. So a lot of us from a young age were conditioned to get over it, like to wipe the tears off and just get busy with something, go do something. And in my household, it was about being productive. And depending on your generation, even the idea of being a loved child of God had to do with your accomplishments and what had you done lately? What productivity, what things have you done? And so we may have conditioning rolling around inside of us that is driving us to get up and get busy, get back on the horse. I mean, we have so many colloquialisms and behavior chains that are all around do it again, do it more, get back up, persevere. I mean, that is underneath the very definition of success in the West. It's like, it's not how many times you fall down, it's how many times you get back up. I mean, we're really conditioned to just keep going. And the time to sit and just be with where we are is not that welcomed. And we're not that practiced at doing it. So it's not surprising to me, especially in a situation where no one else can tell you're suffering. It's just an inside experience unless you tell them I'm suffering. The recommendation that I would have for people is that just like their suffering can be totally hidden and inside, that they allow themselves the grace of allowing it to be whatever it is, and to make peace with the fact that you have to have a special pair of, you know, glasses to actually see what I'm going through, and be okay with that, that it doesn't make the other person wrong that they can't tell, and it doesn't make you wrong for not having gotten over it. It just means the communication channel between the two of you is a little disconnected. And so what? Who cares? Stop that crying or I'll give you something to cry about. It's time for that saying to have less control over us. And I say, cry until you can't cry anymore. And then say, oh, that was great. Wow, that was cool. I really did let a whole bunch of negative energy leave me at that point, you know, in that one, that was great.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. The other night, I found myself watching a rom-com that I don't normally do, but, and I started crying and all of this. And I'm still, I mean, for the characters in the show, right? But after it was over, I sat there and I noticed, goodness sakes, that I must have needed to cry because I felt a really interesting release that really had nothing to do with a well-trod trope. I mean, it was such a predictable rom-com, but anyway.
I say brava, right? Something was triggered. And when we try to hold that energy down because we think other people won't receive it well, or even we don't receive it well, that becomes stuck energy. And stuck energy, the longer it stays stuck, becomes toxic energy. And toxic energy has to manifest as something toxic. And I'm sure I don't have to tell you what those toxic things might be. So it's like we are really being called into letting the energy flow. Emotions are just waves of energy. Let them flow. Just like the waves come into the ocean, come into the shore, Our emotions are the same. They're much more innocuous when we let them flow than when we try to hold them down. And we don't even have to understand them. I mean, at some point we can just say, well, I felt like crying, so I cried. What were you crying about? I don't know. Don't you want to know? I don't know that it's important. I just let the tears go. How do you feel now? Great. You know, maybe it's not great. Better than when I was crying. So yay for me.
Well, about yay for you. I want to bring something up because we're down to about 7-8 minutes here. I was reading online again. I follow her on social media as well. But tell me more about the glow up experience. I'm really excited for it. And everything you've been sharing right now, I'm just like, oh, that just sounds so perfectly juicy to be able to immerse myself in. As I was reading it, though, I would love you to explain a little bit more about what mind-body-spirit activation is, because I think I know, but I'd love to know what Dr. Valerie says it is.
Yes. Okay. Thank you so much. And I love talking about these kinds of experiences. So first of all, I have been doing retreats for 25, 30 years. And what I like about them is, number one, get people away from their everyday, gotta do it lives. And in some of my retreats, they have to check their cell phones at the door. It just depends. So the immersion, the kind of get out of your element, it shifts your internal space, your interior. And the massive transformation that we're talking about is an interior journey to an exterior nirvana. So the whole idea of the laws of the universe, as within, so without. So if you want your outer world to change, you've got to be really committed to shifting what's on the inside of you. Happiness is an inside game. It's an inner journey to an outer kind of reflected magnificence, or what I call juicy and delicious. So mind, body, spirit activation is, how do we breathe into you these nuggets of goodness that, like seeds planted in fertile soil and germinating, until they start, a seedling comes up and it starts to bud. And before we know it, we've got a mighty oak tree growing of a new way of you looking at your life, a new way of you receiving you, a new way of you having perspective on the good, the bad, and the ugly of your life, even deciding that anything's ugly, maybe that's not serving you anymore. The whole idea is that we work with you through a couple of different modalities to give you an opportunity to sharpen your mental acuity around my mindset. Is my mindset supportive, and mindset with an emphasis on spirituality and bringing spirit into mindset? And then emotional intelligence around, emotional intelligence is in mindset. I mean, physiological intelligence, like how well do we know our bodies? How well do we actually have conversations with our bodies? When our body says, I'm tired, do we keep pushing through, like powering over? Do we pull all-nighters? Do we tell ourselves sleep is for the dead people? Like, how do I need to get into a different relationship with my body or physical intelligence? And then lastly, which a lot of people tell me, this is where they feel like they've kind of really dropped the ball on nurturing for themselves as they've gone through the different phases of their lives. And it's time, again, coming out of this last 3 years and everything that they went through, they're feeling there's a gap there. There's a space where they'd actually like to feel full. There's untethered, kind of floating in the breeze, when they'd like to feel really anchored in the spirituality, the spiritual self that they are, and be able to leverage that, use that, really rely on that as a part of their discernment, as a part of their choicefulness, as a part of their guidance, as a part of their joy. And so that's what we mean by mind, body, spirit activation. We will have modalities, and I've got a couple of really awesome co-facilitators that are bringing things into this at just the right time. And for us to really restore people to wholeness and return them to flow. And the wholeness comes from this alignment of the whole self. So we are 100% spiritual, and we're 100% human. And when we integrate them as we are living our lives, we've got a wholeness that returns to us. We are divine masculine and divine feminine. And in the world today, there's a lot of emphasis on activating the feminine. And from my perspective, what we haven't done enough of is healed the masculine. Whether you're a woman or a man, we have some toxicity in the masculine energy, and we'll be looking at how we reintegrate a healthy, healed masculine and put him together with your divine feminine and create a level of wholeness there. We've got heaven, and we've also got the earthly realm, the upper dimensions and the lower dimensions. And how do we allow you, like, give you the skills? It's skills, right? It's not just being some special person. It's skills. You can learn them to actually live heaven inside the third dimension called earth, this plane. Like, who doesn't want that? And so that's what we'll be doing.
Well, I'm fondly remembering that it was just pre-pandemic, I think it was January 2020, that you and I had retreat time together, and it was awesome. I have such fond memories, and I'm excited for the glow up experience. And just the last minute or so that we have, it's in France. And so tell us a little bit about it and where we can maybe, because we're almost out of time, maybe go take a look at the website.
So the website is glowupworld.com, glowupworld.com. And it's in France, in the south of France, not in Paris. It's 6 hours south of Paris, near the border with Spain, in the Pyrenees Mountains, in a beautiful medieval village in the foothills of the Pyrenees, a medieval village called Chalabre, and in an ancient chateau. And it has everything you can think of when you remember, when you think about, ooh, French chateau. Yeah. And we're in, the region is filled with vineyards and there's blue sky, and it's a very spiritual place. Early Christianity had a lot of activity, and there are other dynamics there. And it's just, it's a beautiful container. I've been to the area. I was there for 2 months last year. And I've also been to the retreat center called Yobaba Lounge. It's a 5-star Condé Nast rated retreat center, and it's going to be delicious. Come play with us.
Oh, absolutely. I have such fond memories of playing with you right before COVID too. Oh my goodness.
I know. We were in San Antonio. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, everyone, that's Dr. Valerie Renee Shepherd, and she's amazing. As you could tell, it was glowupworld.com if you want to find out more about the upcoming retreat. I do it right away because when's the retreat? I think it's
May 29th to June 4th. Thank you. Yeah, that's kind of important. We're 60 days away. And yes, we want to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Run over there right now. That'll be fantastic. And I'll have that website up at understandingautoimmune.com as well.
Thank you.
So, Valerie, thank you so much. It was so good to see you again. I know during the pandemic, some of us just lost touch with each other. And I'm so excited about this experience because a retreat with you is an absolute treat. Everyone, have a great week. Whatever your adventures, join me next week for another brand new episode. Enjoy.
The information provided on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, including the websites understandingautoimmune.com and lifeinterruptedradio.com, plus social media, is for educational purposes only. What you read, hear, and see on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, and its websites and other media outlets, is based on experience only. The information should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, "Sorry, I'm rambling," you say, "Thank you for listening." Join us at ProjectForgive.com, a free, non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach, and my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.
Hey, hon, what you doing with your phone? Taking pictures?
No, I'm asking it questions.
Like what?
Hey, Bobo, do flowers have best friends?
I'm sorry. I'm afraid I don't know that.
Hey, follow me. I want to show you something. Look, flowers do have best friends.
Whoa.
Some answers can only be found in nature. Discover the unsearchable. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a trail near you. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.